Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, November 15th, 2017. South Sudanese analysts say a Supreme Court justice's surprise resignation underscores the need for serious reforms in the country's judiciary.
Those problems might include salary of judges. Some of them might be tempted to accept bribes from people in order to decide in their favor. The judges should be allowed to express their views as is stipulated under the Constitution of South Sudan.
And South Sudan's Transitional National Assembly passes a law requiring employers to make 80% of their hires South Sudanese.
It's a bill that we start calling for it to come to existence immediately after the independency, simply because we don't have a law to protect the rights of workers and also to oblige employers to make sure that the rights of employees are catered for.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Legal analysts in South Sudan say the resignation of Supreme Court Justice Pitia, who called the country's judiciary system a mockery, shows South Sudan's justice system is broken and will not be fixed until judges can act independently. They say most judges must decide whether they are going to make fair and just rulings and risk losing their jobs or make rulings that favor the Kiir administration. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
In his letter to President Kiir yesterday, Supreme Court Justice Kukur Lopita Marino Pitia said there is a systemic lack of independence in South Sudan's judiciary because the Kiir administration does not allow independence. South Sudanese lawyer Ezekiel Eresto, who prefers not to identify his employer for security reasons, says Justice Pitia will be missed.
You know, Justice Kurukuru has been one of the hard-working justices in this country. He loved his work so much, and he was among some of the few judges who could promptly come to court and then do their work with a lot of zeal and then determination. For the judiciary to get someone who is hardworking like Justice Kurukuru, it's going to be very, very, very difficult. Most of the judges have resigned, others have been dismissed.
In his letter, Pitia also complained about how Chief Justice Chan Rech Madud runs the judiciary, saying it is difficult for judges to administer justice and guarantee supremacy of the rule of law because the judicial system no longer delivers justice in accordance with the constitution. Eresto says the government must enact serious reforms that would allow honest justices like Pitia to return to the bench. Advocate John Ada Wilson, who runs the Juba-based Justice Advocates Law Firm, says Pitia's resignation exposes the deep flaws in South Sudan's judicial system.
What it means is that there is a problem with the judiciary because this just comes few months after the judges resumed their work after they went on strike. So, and now we have seen another challenge, one of the justices of Supreme Court resigning. So that means the future is uncertain.
Wilson says Pitia's resignation should serve as a wake-up call for the Kiir administration to make immediate and necessary reforms.
Those problems might include salary of judges should be increased so that it should be able to meet their needs, their individual needs, and of course the needs of their family. Some of them might be tempted to accept bribes from people in order to decide in their favor. So that means it will lead to miscarriage of justice in the country, which is not good. The judges should be allowed to express their views independently, as is stipulated under the Constitution of South Sudan.
Although Pitia's resignation could bring about positive change in the judiciary, it could also make obtaining justice more difficult in a country where judges are appointed by President Kiir.
The judiciary is not independent because it is being directed by the executive, because, of course, judges are being appointed by the president. So that means there is likelihood that the president can appoint judges who can advance the interests of the executive compared to if the judges were to be appointed by a separate body.
Wilson says most justices in South Sudan can be fired by the executive branch of government if they make a ruling that does not please the government. Pitia resigned 2 months after President Kiir fired 14 judges who had been calling for judicial reforms. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
South Sudanese lawmakers yesterday passed a new labor law, which they say will protect workers and provide guidelines for employment of foreigners in the country. The bill was first introduced in parliament 4 years ago. Since independence in 2011, South Sudan has been using the Sudanese labor law. At least one civil society activist says the new law is long overdue. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Anthony Lino Makana, Speaker of the South Sudan's Transitional National Legislative Assembly, announces passage of the labor legislation. President Salva Kiir is expected to sign the legislation into law in the next few days. If President Kiir does not sign the bill within the next month, it will automatically become law. Labor, Public Service and Human Resource Ministry officials say they have faced several challenges over the past few years because up to now there were no labor regulations in South Sudan. Victor Omugo Odiga, Deputy Chairperson of the Assembly's Labor and Public Service Committee, told reporters yesterday that the new law will preserve employment opportunities for many South Sudanese graduates in both the public and private sectors.
All the time you have been complaining about unemployment, jobs being taken by foreigners, your parliament has done the best thing they could do for you by passing this law. Together, let us celebrate and let us ask ourselves that let us own this law.
Mary Hilary Wani, Undersecretary for Labor and Industrial Relations at the Labor Ministry, confirms that until now, the government used Sudanese labor law. Wani says officials often find it challenging when dealing with foreign workers in South Sudan while quoting the labor laws of another country.
We have been facing a lot of problems. We have been embarrassed in certain situations where we are challenged that where is your law? It's now 5 years or 7 years to your independence and still you are getting the law from the previous laws of Sudan. So it is a great privilege today that we have our law passed as South Sudan.
The bill requires employers in private sector organizations, including NGOs, to ensure that 80% of their employees are South Sudanese nationals. Dominic Ojok, who works for the Catholic Church in Juba, applauds the new bill for requiring employers to set aside 80% for their jobs for locals.
If you go to most organizations, you find the director is a foreigner. The DVT will be the foreigners. You can sometimes also a finance is a foreigner. Sometimes find a cleaner is also a foreigner. So I think it is because there was no labor law that governs the organization, that governs the NGOs in the country.
The law also stipulates maternity and paternal leave, termination of contracts, and employee benefits. Wani says the new law will also help regulate working conditions for both national and foreign employees in South Sudan. Edmund Yakani, the Executive Director for local NGO Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or CEPO, says the law is long overdue and congratulates lawmakers for creating a legal framework to protect the rights of workers.
This is a long-awaited bill. For the last 4 years, we've been talking about it. And actually, it's a bill that we start calling for it to come to existence immediately after the independence, simply because we don't have a law to protect the rights of workers and also to oblige employers to make sure that the rights of employees are catered for.
Yakani urged lawmakers to enforce the law so that citizens are aware of their rights as employees. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
South Sudanese in the Ugandan capital, Kampala, say they hope the ongoing national dialogue process will help identify the root causes of South Sudan's conflict and lead to recommendations for lasting solutions. A delegation from the National Dialogue's Subcommittee on Refugees and International Outreach opened consultations today with various stakeholders in Kampala who say they have suffered for far too long. Simon Peter Apiku has the story for VOA from Kampala.
More than 200 people from interest groups representing women, students, youth, and faith-based groups were taking part in the 2 days of National Dialogue Talks in Kampala. Deng Dao, who chairs the Subcommittee on Refugees and International Outreach, says it's important to bring the dialogue process to Uganda, which hosts more than 1 million South Sudanese refugees.
For the purposes of accountability, for the purposes of credibility of the process, for the purposes of public participation, we cannot say the process is credible, is inclusive, it was open for public participation, if we have not come to refugees and we have not come to South Sudanese living in this country.
Dao says participants can speak openly about what they see as the root causes of South Sudan's conflict and their views will be documented. Martin Kuol, a member of the South Sudan Youth Forum in Uganda, says he is eager to participate in today's consultations with the committee.
Since the conflict started in our country, a lot of lives have been lost, a lot of property have been lost, and we see as a body, it is high time for South Sudanese to come together and embrace peace and work together.
Panda Machol of the South Sudanese Women's Association in Uganda is calling on all South Sudanese to express their grievances, including SPLM-IO members who support former First Vice President Riek Machar.
If you are IO, you are aware, you come, let us talk, let us sit down, let us talk, let us bring peace to South Sudan. Without peace, without talking, without we come together, nothing we do.
Despite efforts by the organizers to assure participants that no one will be victimized because of expressing their views, some opposition supporters refused to take part in the discussion. Coach Maduk, a student leader from Upper Nile, says that's a mistake.
Their views and these issues that they are saying that are wrong about the national dialogue will not be heard. So the views that will be heard are for the people that are present, and that view will be taken as the voice of all South Sudanese.
Jackson Enosa, a student from Equatoria who participated, says he hopes the national dialogue process will come up with real solutions to the country's problems so that the suffering can end.
Most of us are traumatized and psychologically tortured. Students' performance has reduced drastically. And financially, students are unable to complete their tuitions in time. So most of our students have dropped out.
Dow agrees.
It is true, people are bitter. It is true, people are not happy. But in the end, we as South Sudanese, it is a responsibility of this generation to resolve the current problem that they have caused.
Following the Kampala consultations, Dao says he and members of his delegation will travel to northern Uganda to meet with South Sudanese refugees to gather their views on how the ongoing conflict can be resolved. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
It looks like South Sudanese primary students getting ready to take their primary leaving examinations will have to wait a little longer to do so. The exams were originally scheduled for early December, but Deng Deng Ho Chiai, the Minister of General Education, says the government is trying to get money together to pay for printing, along with the supplies needed to administer the tests.
I had a meeting today with the Minister of Finance, and he has assured me that in the next couple of days, he will be able to make payment, and that will enable the council to be able to print the rest of the examinations and distribute them on time.
The products come from Uganda. The products needed to run the test come from Uganda. Is that correct?
It is true, yes. The consumables, including papers, ink cartridges for the printing press, yes, they come from Uganda, but they take between 24 hours to 48 hours. It is just a matter of putting them on a lorry and bringing them to Juba. It is not a long distance.
Approximately how long do you think it will take for them to travel from Uganda to South Sudan in time for the primary students to take their test?
In the past, once they are loaded on the lorry arrives within 24 hours. It is not a long distance.
Are you confident that the examinations will go on as scheduled?
I am confident that the exams will be administered in December. I have a leeway. It is not a matter of doing the exams on the 5th or not doing them at all. Even if the examinations are not administered on the 5th of December, we can still do them the following week.
How much money does it take to print the exam papers and the necessary equipment needed to administer the test?
It depends on the number of subjects, and it depends on the transportation from the capital to the 32 states and Abia administrative area. Of course, transportation will cost the same amount because you go to the same state capital, 33 locations. So the cost of air transport will be more or less the same for primary and for secondary examination. Last time when we did the transportation by air, it cost 8 million South Sudanese pounds.
And what happened to the money that was set aside for the primary leaving examinations?
There is a budget. The budget is in the book. But the budget is to be executed. The execution of the budget means you submitting a request every time you need money. You submit a request to the Ministry of Finance and Planning. And based on your request, you will get approval for the money, and the money will be transferred from the account of the Ministry of Finance to the account of the spending agency. The issue now is that we are following procedure to get the money from the Ministry of Finance. There has been a delay, and that delay has caused the delay in the printing of the examination. But I met with the Minister of Finance today, and he has assured me that the payment will be made in the next two days. At least 10 million Sudanese pounds will be made available.
That was Deng Deng Hach Yai, Minister of General Education, speaking to me yesterday from Juba. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. What's the latest on the military takeover in Zimbabwe? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what are you most grateful for?
Grateful for my life, because I'm alive, I have a job, and I'm happy.
I'm grateful because I'm at campus. I'm at the university, yeah. That's my favorite thing I've ever thought of and I've ever dreamt about, being at campus.
My parents, I'm grateful for them. They've been around for me for all this long. Actually, they've been struggling to pay my school fees up to this level. It's not easy to get money, but they are paying my fees, and I'm so grateful for them.
I'm most grateful for my brothers, because they are taking care of me since I lost my father in 2010. But I'm still alive because of my brothers. They are taking care of me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Africa's president says longtime Zimbabwean leader Robert Mugabe is confined to his home in what appears to be a military-backed effort to oust him after 37 years in power. President Jacob Zuma chairs the Southern African Development Community. He said in a statement early today that President Robert Mugabe indicated that he was confined to his home, but said that he was fine. South Africa, he said, is also in contact with the Zimbabwean Defense Force. The country is floating in a state of uncertainty after the nation's army moved on the capital, Harare, yesterday. After nearly four decades in office, President Robert Mugabe appears to have finally gone too far in firing his vice president and positioning his wife to succeed him. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
No one saw it coming, and yet everyone saw it coming. For at least a decade, Zimbabwe's standards of living have been sliding. Its economy is in shambles, its health system in tatters, its elections discredited, its infrastructure a shadow of the promise the nation held when it gained independence in 1980. In recent years, protest movements came and went. Journalists spoke up and were silenced, and nearly a million citizens claimed political asylum in neighboring South Africa. But throughout that, it appeared that nothing would challenge the supremacy of the only leader Zimbabwe has ever known, President Robert Mugabe. But then, when the aging president fired his deputy and indicated that he would replace him with his unpopular wife, Grace Mugabe, the head of the armed forces warned he would step in unless Mugabe stopped trying to purge the ruling party of supporters of the ousted vice president. That, says analyst Piers Pigou of the International Crisis Group, was the tipping point.
Something obviously had to give, particularly over the last week and the last few days when the situation has become a lot more tense. He said that we will intervene, and I think that a number of people thought that this was a bluff, that he wouldn't intervene, that Mugabe still retained some measure of control of the situation.
It's now clear that General Constantina Chiwenga was not bluffing. After tanks were seen rumbling through Harare on Tuesday, soldiers took over state TV in the wee hours of Wednesday. An Army spokesman, Major General S.B. Moyo, delivered this stunning statement.
Comrade R.G. Mugabe and his family are safe and sound, and their security is guaranteed. We are only targeting criminals around him who are committing crimes that are causing social and economic suffering in the country in order to bring them to justice.
But the drama may be just beginning. Zimbabwe's ruling party said on social media that Mnangagwa will return and take the helm, as they say the constitution provides. But Pigou says a change in leadership will not, on its own, solve Zimbabwe's woes.
Much now depends, of course, on the line that is taken by whichever political force comes to power, and we believe that will be Mr. Mnangagwa will be brought back now. Is he going to open the door to some kind of inclusive political settlement? Bearing in mind that the economic and the social situation in Zimbabwe is so dire that it does require an intervention that goes beyond the normal political arena.
And of course, everyone is wondering what will come of the power couple at the heart of this drama. Few analysts think that Mugabe and his wife will themselves face the retributive rage of the Zimbabwean people. Analyst Alex Magaisa of the University of Kent predicts a soft landing for them, but thinks that Mugabe's longtime cheerleaders are in for a tough time.
Perhaps they might have to leave the country in order to avoid having that pocket of power, which would be challenging. But I think those who are aligned to the first family, to President Mugabe and his wife, I think they are the ones who are going to face the brunt of the new regime.
For years, Mugabe is right was the rallying cry of Zimbabwe's powerful elite. Those who questioned the powerful leader were vilified or punished. But now, with Zimbabwe's strongmen suddenly silent, the questions are mounting. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The swift and nonviolent ouster of President Mugabe by the military has left much of Africa and the international community surprised and scurrying for a response. VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with former U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria, John Campbell, at the Council on Foreign Relations for his thoughts on what the American response has been and is likely to be in these early stages.
It's still a bit early for a statement from the State Department or from the White House. I would anticipate that at this early date, a statement would essentially call for calm and the avoidance of conflict. Zimbabwe is much less important to the United States now than it was 10 or 15 years ago. The rather dreary history of Zimbabwean human rights abuses, rigged elections, and so forth that have characterized Robert Mugabe's governance, and the fact that it has been very difficult to make any progress means that even amongst those very interested in Africa, attention has essentially shifted elsewhere. The principal international player with respect to Zimbabwe remains South Africa.
Now, when you say the Americans are not as interested in Zimbabwe as they once were, still, dually, there's a stake in following the democratic niceties in terms of, you know, just not deposing a president because you don't like him. Do you think that will be part of the American response?
The first point, I think, is that the coup makers, I think, will be very careful not to use language to the effect that they have deposed Robert Mugabe. I expect that whoever ends up actually running the country will retain Mugabe as at least a figurehead, something that's really quite clever from the perspective of the coup makers. So I would expect that at least in early days, any statement from Washington about whether it was a coup or not will be avoided. For one thing, if, in fact, the administration determines that a coup has taken place, there are certain congressionally mandated steps that that have to be taken. And I think certainly in the early days, those making American policy towards Zimbabwe will want to avoid having their options limited or boxed in.
Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ian. Legal analysts say the resignation of Supreme Court Justice Pidia's surprise resignation underscores South Sudan's broken justice system. They say it cannot be fixed until judges are allowed to act independently. South Sudanese lawyer Ezekiel Ernesto says most judges must decide whether they're going to be fair and just in how they rule and risk losing their jobs or make rulings that favor the Kiir administration. In his resignation letter to the president yesterday, Supreme Court Justice Cougar Lopita Marino Pitia said there is a lack of independence in South Sudan's judiciary that is systemic because the Kiir administration does not allow independence. Lawyer Ernesto, who prefers not to identify his employer for security reasons, says Justice Pitia was hardworking and will be missed. He says the government must enact serious reforms that would allow honest justices like Pitia to return to the bench. Advocate John Ada Wilson says Pitia's resignation should serve as a wake-up call for the Kiir administration to make immediate and necessary reforms. South Sudanese lawmakers yesterday passed a new labor law which they say will protect workers and provide guidelines for employment of foreigners in the country. The bill was first introduced in Parliament some 4 years ago. Since independence in 2011, South Sudan has been using the Sudanese labor law. The new law would require employers working in the country, including NGOs, to set aside some 80% of their hires for South Sudanese nationals. President Kiir is expected to sign the legislation into law this week. If he doesn't sign the bill within the next month, it automatically becomes law. Labor, Public Service, and Human Resources Ministry officials say they face several challenges doing their work in the past. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Coco by Sultan Clinton.
Je m'appelle Sultan Clinton. Je suis de l'Afrique, l'international. Banata senare, bilessa go fuara taki, bilessa go madre se bukere ta futu. Ah, kanabidu suwe, koko turujuana batale, kanabikili mumamulu. Sous sa tombe, vous pouvez dire qu'on a sauvé à ton fond. Natural opie, koko turujana la kadira saïbi katerin faka. Sibana, Sibana, Coco, 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 but the Purjana, the Cadi Mix of Mayo, the Cadi Fish of Meleki, Kalanta Mohaba, the one of the other big shots.
Move your legs.
I didn't see me as I'm getting some water, like the only some other sheep.
Move your legs.
Boy, I'm a big 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 boy
We've been listening to Sultan Clinton with the song Coco. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. We're glad you could join us. We want to hear your comments about the show. Drop us a line on the web at southsudan@voanews.com. Or you can find us on our Facebook site at South Sudan in Focus. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Sibana.